Listen to the song of a city. The great theme of a living metropolis translated into melody as NBC presents Big City Serenade. Saluting our honor city of the day, our own city, Chicago. Starring Skip Farrell, Joseph Galicchio and the orchestra, and your narrator, Bill Grisky. From Chicago, we bring you Big City Serenade. Skip Farrell.
Hiya, Bill Grisky.
Oh, it's about time you got home. Glad to have you back. Oh, how was California?
This show about California today?
Well, not exactly, no.
Well, then we'd better wait until we have about 4 hours to discuss it, huh?
Say, you missed quite a show, brother. But you're back in time for another one. We had a little excitement around here.
Excitement? Oh, conventions, you mean, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, Chicago can take it. Come Monday, we'll be starting the 21st big party convention here in less than 100 years.
Some of them pretty exciting, too. We won't mention any names, but there was one time when they had to put barbed wire around the platform to keep delegates from slugging the speakers.
9 men who were nominated in Chicago went to the White House, and we can't miss this time. There'll be a 10th this year.
Hey, that's funny. There've been 9 Chicago buildings used for conventions. And the amphitheater makes the 10th. Only 3 of them besides the amphitheater are still in existence.
Oh, I didn't know there were that many. The old wigwam's gone.
Well, there were 2 wigwams, as a matter of fact. Just listen to old Professor Grisky here. And the 3 still standing are the old Auditorium Theater, the Coliseum, and the Stadium.
Well, let's give a bow to the past conventions and the one coming up with the march just made for this show, you might say. Convention City March.
Here's the tip-off on what our Big City Serenade's about today. Convention City March for the Convention City.
You know, Bill, in spite of all the conventions here, a native Chicagoan's never been nominated. Did you know how we got the first convention?
No, can't say I do.
Although I know it was the 1860 convention which touched off this chain reaction.
Well, sir, it just happens I do know. It seems the fellows down east sort of underestimated a candidate named Abraham Lincoln back in 1860.
Yeah, but I don't see what that has to do with picking Chicago for the convention.
Well, let me talk, will you? Let me talk. A pretty good handful of the eastern cities had favorite sons to put up for nomination, and the boys who were running things decided it'd be smart to pick a neutral city.
Well, that I didn't know. I did know, though, that the city had to rush around to get something for the delegates to meet in, and they sort of tossed up a two-story frame building they called the Wigwam.
It wasn't too far away, either. Right on the southeast corner of what's now Lake and Wacker.
So, out of Chicago's first political convention, we got the first winner.
We turned out the first loser, too. The Democrats built a real highfalutin building here in Chicago, the amphitheater, for their convention when they nominated General McClellan. It isn't a secret that Abraham beat him.
Well, we turned out a winner in 1860 and a loser in 1864. What next?
Well, for one thing, I'm casting my ballot right now.
Say, you're a little bit in advance, aren't you, Chum? You know, election's not until November. Oh, incidentally, who's your candidate, Skip?
Well, how about Wintergreen, your president?
Well, Skipper, now that you've gone on record for your candidate, let's go back to Chicago's first convention. Incidentally, that was the second convention the Republicans ever had.
It was a dandy, too, Bill. They had demonstrations even then, and the Sewardites organized a bunch of rooters who were briefed to yell like anything every time Seward's name was mentioned.
Yeah, seems to me I've heard something like that just recently.
No. Well, Lincoln's boys were on their toes, too. They got hold of a Dr. Ames, supposed to be unequal as a shouter. A gentleman who, they said, could be heard across Lake Michigan during a storm.
Say, you know, Skip, I was looking through the files at the Chicago Historical Society the other day, and I found out that a delegate at large from Iowa walked 150 miles to get to a railroad so he could come to Chicago.
Say, that's party loyalty for you. When Seward's men marched to the Wigwam, they had a band. You know what they played?
Nope. I wasn't around then, Skip.
A little piece that was pretty popular then. It was called, Oh, Isn't He a Darling?
Man and boy, I've liked quite a few candidates, but darling's never been the word I'd have used for them.
The Easterners found Midwestern go-getters were way ahead of them all along the line. The night before the convention, a few of the wiseacres had duplicate tickets printed, and the galleries stacked for their candidate long before Seward fans got to the Wigwam.
Yeah, delegates had a tough time that year. They got all kinds of invitations.
What do you mean, tough, Bill? What's tough about invitations?
Well, they had a tough time keeping their minds on business. The Board of Trade invited them to take an excursion on the lake. All the railroads wanted to take them on trips downstate or upstate or out of state. And there was quite an argument on the floor about whether they should keep on with the convention or just adjourn to the lake.
I think one of the best things about the convention was the nomination speech by Norman Judd, who put Lincoln before the convention. Just one single sentence was all he needed.
You know, Skip, I'm beginning to think that that's all anybody needs. I'm all for it. Getting back to the convention music, I don't much care to hear, Oh, Isn't He a Darling, but How's about your singing a Lincoln campaign song for us, huh?
There once was old Abram, lived out in the West, esteemed by his neighbors, the wisest and best. And if you will only but follow my ditty, I'll tell you how we took a walk down to Washington City. Sing tooralai. His home was in Springfield out in Illinois, where he'd long been the pride of the men and the boys. But he left his brown house without a sigh of regret, for he knew that the people had a white one to let. Sing tooralai, oo-ralai, oo-ralai. So old Abe, he trudged on to Washington straight, and he entered the White House through the Avenue Gate. Old Buck and his cronies, some chaps from the South, sat around the East Room, rather down in the mouth. Sing tooralai, oo-ralai, oo-ralai. Old Abe seized the knocker and he gave such a thump, Buck thought the state ship had run into a stump. He trembled all over and he turned deadly pale. That noise, says he, must have been done with a rail. Sing tooralai, oo-ralai, oo-ralai. Then old Abe, he returned to his home in the West, leaving Buck and his cabinet greatly depressed. And if this part of my tale you remember, I'll tell you the balance next 4th of November. Sing tooralai, oo-ralai, oo-ralai. Sing tooralai, oo-ralai, oo-ralai.
Ah, thanks, Skip. That was swell. That was a song which Lincoln men used during the 1860 campaign.
You know, Bill, that reminds me of a peachy little song that they sang back in 1876 when the Republicans nominated Rutherford B. Hayes.
Oh, yeah? Want to sing it?
Well, I don't know the tune, but the words were something like this. Hayes rides a white horse, Tilden rides a mule. Hayes will be the president and Tilden is the fool.
Say, that's mighty pretty. Well, Hayes wasn't the only man to ride into the White House, you know.
I bet you're thinking of a Rough Rider named Theodore Roosevelt. Did you know there was a Roosevelt Rough Riders March?
Oh, I sure did. And we're going to turn Joseph Galicchio and the orchestra loose on it pretty soon, too.
It was really a rough ride to the White House, too, Bill. Some people thought they could put a gag on the outspoken colonel by getting him nominated as McKinley's vice president.
Yeah, and a year later, he was president.
He was president again 4 years later, too. The old Coliseum out on South Wabash had its first convention that year when the Republicans came in to nominate Roosevelt.
Well, weren't they there again in 1912 and for another Roosevelt nomination?
No, same place, but you've got the parties mixed.
Oh.
The Republicans nominated Taft, and the Progressives moved into the Coliseum to nominate Roosevelt.
Well, there's what you'd call a little bit excitement at the Coliseum in those days, huh?
Some, yes. The delegates got up to heckle the speakers, and there was a half-hour demonstration for Roosevelt.
And wasn't there a gal in a blue hat?
Say, that's right. Somebody spotted a pretty girl in a blue hat up in the gallery, so they brought her up to the platform.
Yeah, and that really started a ruckus. Delegates were falling off the platform on all sides while the lady in the blue hat waved a flag.
Let's add a little noise ourselves to that convention, Bill. A nice musical noise as Joe Galicchio and the orchestra play Roosevelt Rough Riders March.
Thank you.
Well, that was the Roosevelt Rough Riders March. But it didn't take Teddy Roosevelt to the White House in 1912. No. Instead, Chicago got two losers out of the conventions that year, and Woodrow Wilson was elected.
Well, we can't miss this year. Somebody from an amphitheater, they call it Convention Hall now, will go to the White House in January.
Yeah, but the first loser out of here was nominated at an amphitheater, you know.
Yeah, well, I know it wasn't this one.
Nope, the Democrats in 1864, and $16,000 they coughed up to build what you might call a high-priced tent on Michigan Avenue.
Now that's a lot of cash for a tent.
Yeah, well, it looked like a tent, and they came from all over to nominate General George B. McClellan to run against Abraham Lincoln.
And there was real elegance a few years later in 1880. Chicago merchants got busy in 1873 and spent $250,000 to build a little three-story shack where the Art Institute stands now.
1880, that was the first convention in that elegant $250,000 shack, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
And that was when the Republicans sent Garfield to the White House.
Say, this boy really knows his history.
Ah, you bet.
Both parties came back to the Exposition Building, that's what they called it, in 1884.
Do you know what helped lower the boom on the Republicans' blame?
Too many votes for the other side?
funny fellow. No, after the convention was over, they found a temperance petition.
A temperance petition?
Yeah. Francis Willard had brought it in, and they found it under a table where it had been kicked around and stepped on.
Oh, for heaven's sake.
And it made the temperance people so mad, they voted for a Democrat, Grover Cleveland. He won the election with 23,000 votes.
And a few years later, we threw Prohibition out under another Democratic president.
Well, temperance or not, let's give a Chicago welcome to the boys who come in next week, Skip. How about singing the Democratic marching song, the one they adopted a few years ago? Happy days are here again.
Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. Let's tell the world about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again. All together, shout it now. There's no one who can doubt it now. Let's tell the world all about it now. Happy days are here again. Your cares and troubles are gone. There'll be no more from now on. Happy days are here again. The skies above are clear again. Let us sing a song of cheer again. Happy days are here again.
Thank you, Skip. And before anybody starts yelling that we're being partisan, the Republican marching song's coming up in just a minute.
You mean Great Day?
Yes, indeed.
Okay, we like everybody. And you know, Bill, one of the conventions I'd like especially to have seen was back at Crosby's Opera House in 1868.
Oh, yes, 1868, when they put up General Grant.
You know, there was a fight over delegates then, and Colorado was one of the states they got into a hassle over.
Well, what did Colorado do, Skip?
Nothing. She just wasn't quite a state then. But they finally let the delegates in because they figured by voting time, Colorado would be out of the territory class and in among the states.
Yeah, and there were a bunch of eager beavers in that convention, too. Mm. There were two nominations for General Grant before the Credentials Committee had time to get in its report.
And then they had to stop the convention because a delegation of soldiers and sailors wanted in.
All kinds of delegates that year, huh?
You bet. The soldiers and sailors marched in to present a resolution to the House for their candidate, and they wanted General Grant.
Oh, a great day in Crosby's Opera House.
They finally nominated General Grant unanimously. Everybody went crazy, so it must have been a great day.
Of course, Skip, you know, when you come right down to it, they didn't need a convention to elect Washington one of the greatest presidents we ever had.
Well, there was a convention of sorts, Bill, a convention of states.
Yeah, that's right. It came just in time to hold the country together when the rest of the world thought we'd just fall apart.
Out of all this came a man who didn't want to be president. He was too modest. He said he went to the job with, quote, feelings not unlike those of the culprit who is going to the place of execution.
Ah, but he felt worse than that when his army wanted to make him king.
Not only the army, but most of his countrymen. Anyhow, no matter which side you vote with, I don't think there's an American who will mind if we say, let's wind up our convention story with a salute to our first president and one of our greatest, George Washington.
And for General Washington, we have the George Washington March.
rhythms of one of our great cities, Chicago, the convention city, NBC has built for you this Big City Serenade. We've presented in this Song of the City, Skip Farrell and Joseph Galicchio with the NBC Orchestra. Each week at this time, NBC salutes a different city in this Big City Serenade. This is Bill Grisky inviting you to join us again next week, when our musical bow will be toward our fellow Americans to the north in Toronto, Canada. Big City Serenade is produced by Ralph Knowles, script by Morgan Perrin. Three chimes mean good times on NBC. Today, NBC brings you another in its series of pre-convention programs. This special program is called Convention Preview, and it will feature a regional roundup of positions of the state delegates to the Democratic National Convention. Tonight, hear Convention Preview, a preview of the voting on NBC.